In a world where wealth equals control, Jonathan King reigns supreme. His empire stretches from corporate boardrooms to political chambers, his influence so vast that even the prime minister heeds his call. But when Aurora Harper appears at his son's wedding, everything changes. She's the spitting image of his dead wife, Alicia, except for red lipstick and different colored eyes. Their collision in the parking lot sets the stage for an inevitable power struggle. He demands she end business dealings with his sworn enemy, Ethan Steele. When she refuses, he traps her against her car, his dominance palpable. No one challenges the king in his own territory, he thinks. But Aurora's defiance burns bright. Fuck Jonathan King. No one tells me what to do. What makes their encounter so electric isn't just the clash of wills, but the secret simmering beneath. Aurora isn't just any businesswoman. She's Alicia's sister, a woman with a mysterious past who's been hiding under Jonathan's radar for years. And now she's stepped directly into his kingdom, unaware that kings don't tolerate trespassers. The tension between them crackles with both animosity and undeniable attraction, creating a dangerous chemistry that will only intensify as their worlds become increasingly entangled. Have you ever faced an opponent who's planned your defeat before your first move? That's Jonathan King, a master strategist who leaves nothing to chance. After confronting Aurora, he uncovers her true identity. Aurora Harper, formerly Clarissa Griffin, daughter of the duct tape killer from Northern England. During her meeting with Ethan Steele about her watchmaking company, Aurora shares how her sister Alicia inspired her passion with her first watch. Just as Ethan offers investment, Jonathan interrupts with lawyers, announcing he now owns 51% of her company. His demand is simple. You, Aurora, giving her until nightfall to decide. Jonathan's power stems from identifying and exploiting vulnerabilities. He orchestrated the takeover by exposing their accountant's embezzlement, leveraging bank connections, and negotiating with investors, creating an apparent no-win situation. Yet, when she sends his driver DAC empty-handed, it marks the second time she's defied his expectations, rare for a man accustomed to absolute control. Dressed in funeral attire, Aurora arrives at Jonathan's mansion on her own terms. Before entering, she receives a flash drive with her sister's warning that someone wanted her dead. Inside, crying angel statues disturb her. They match an engraving on Alicia's watch, suggesting a hidden message. Meeting Jonathan, Aurora shocks him by immediately stripping to her underwear, challenging him to get it over with. He commands her to dress, saying, "You're not a whore, so don't act like one." When she claims her body has been dead for 11 years, Jonathan spanks her, unexpectedly triggering her first orgasm. He concludes, "Pain, that's what you need, Aurora. Lucky for you, I have plenty to give." The next morning, her friend Lila warns Aurora not to lose herself to him. Aurora resolves to survive 6 months with Jonathan, noting she's already endured 16 years with another monster, though Jonathan is an entirely different monster altogether. Despite his power over her, Aurora continues finding ways to defy him, creating a tension that both frustrates and intrigues him. Defying Jonathan's orders, Aurora explores the third floor and discovers Alicia's preserved bedroom. Inside, thriller novels contain disturbing "To My Muse" dedications circled in red. As she reads about someone digging holes, buried memories surface until Jonathan interrupts, furious at her trespass. A solicitor informs Aurora that her father, the duct tape killer, seeks parole after 11 years, asking her to testify she was confused at trial. She later finds his threatening note, "Next time we see each other, either I kill you or you kill me." Another recording from Alicia triggers a flashback. 15-year-old Clarissa, now Aurora, witnessed her father dragging a duct-taped body through the woods. When she called for help, Jonathan told her Alicia had died in a tragic accident. Finding Aurora consumed by these memories, Jonathan shows unexpected tenderness, carrying her as she whimpers her sister's name. "She's not here, but I am. I'll always be here, Wild One," he promises, revealing compassion beneath his controlling facade. Family dynamics reveal a person's true measure. When Jonathan's son Aiden discovers Aurora sitting on his father's lap, he calls her a whore and accuses Jonathan of disrespecting his mother's memory with her lookalike. Jonathan's fierce defense highlights family rifts, including Aiden's marriage to Elsa, daughter of Jonathan's enemy Ethan Steele. Aurora learns that Jonathan blames Ethan for Alicia's death. She died in a car accident while searching for Aiden after his kidnapping. When questioned about her relationship with Jonathan, Aurora acknowledges her limited options, but says she isn't afraid of him. Housekeeper Margot reveals Alicia suffered from severe insomnia, roaming halls at night, talking to herself, scribbling in books, and crying without reason, contradicting the sister Aurora knew. These revelations expose a family fractured by tragedy. Jonathan's coldness toward his sons contrasts with his possessive desire for Aurora, whose resemblance to Alicia has awakened something suppressed. As weeks pass, Aurora's relationship with Jonathan subtly transforms. Though still punishing her for nights in his bed, she's breaking through his facade. His confession that she's the first to share his bed, not even Alicia, reveals she's accessing a hidden part of him. Their dynamic shifts when Aurora demands a kiss as part of their arrangement. What she expected to be just a kiss becomes overwhelming. Jonathan's dominant kiss leaves her weak-kneed, exposing how deeply she's falling for him, despite her judgment. For Jonathan, these changes are equally unsettling. He finds himself allowing Aurora into his controlled life, her toothbrush beside his, her apple shampoo in his bathroom, her scent on his clothes. He looks forward to coming home and even cuts meetings short, behavior uncharacteristic for this work-defined man. While Jonathan maintains sexual control, Aurora gains emotional influence, far more dangerous territory for a man with walls around his heart. Their relationship balances power and vulnerability, forcing both to confront long-denied aspects of themselves. The weight of deadly secrets and her complex relationship with Jonathan finally breaks Aurora. Her father's haunting words, "You're born alone, you die alone, why do you keep leaning on other people?" echo as she faces multiple threats, her father's potential release, an attack from a victim's daughter, and Alicia's warning messages. Following her sister's recorded advice, Aurora runs, just as she did 11 years ago upon discovering her father's crimes. Her disappearance isn't merely escaping Jonathan, it's protecting herself from converging unbearable threats. This flight marks the novel's climax, leaving Jonathan to face the consequences of his possessive love. The man who controls everything now confronts what he can't control, Aurora's absence. His declaration that, if a battle is what it'll take to protect and own her, I'll shed blood, sets the stage for the sequel. In a world where power corrupts and secrets kill, Aurora and Jonathan's story reminds us that often, the most dangerous journey isn't running from others, it's confronting the darkness within ourselves.